Hello everyone, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have a special interview for you with former Assistant HUD Secretary, Dylan Reed Partner, and the President of the Solari Report, Catherine Austin Fitz, returning to the program to tell us that from digital concentration camps to global dictatorship, it's happening now, and we are the last best hope for humanity to defy the centralization and corruption of a transhumanist agenda of total control.
They can turn off your refrigerator, they can turn off your water, they can turn off your gas, they can turn off your car, they can turn off your credit card, they can turn off your bank account, everything.
Please join us now. The trucker convoy protest might be a good kind of snapshot for this. So on one hand, you know, on the top level, they want to roll out automated driverless cars, driverless transportation. We had all those weird issues around shipping containers. And, you know, they were like, oh, the inflation is because of the shipping containers. And, you know, they had all this strangeness about transportation before the convoys. Right. Now we have a major push there by the truckers in Ottawa. What's your feeling on this? I mean, on one hand, you have an organic movement, a push, a protest against the vaccine mandates, but then there's something else operative there, maybe, which has more to do with organization of this as a way to eliminate and introduce the driverless.
Well, here's the thing. The truckers have the talent and experience to pull off an extraordinary thing like this. So You have a lot of the truckers. I don't know the Canadian truckers, but I know the U.S. truckers. And they're arguably one of the most, if not the most, competent groups in the country.
Right.
So they have, you know, lots of experience doing things that are dangerous, risky, and important, You know, essential functions. A lot of them have military experience. They're very knowledgeable on sort of the intelligence and covert side. They run their own little businesses, so they have to be responsible and accountable and deal with very unfair sort of financial situations and dealing with rigged markets. They see what's moving around. They're very knowledgeable. They drive around. They talk to people. I mean, I've learned a lot sitting around at truck stops. And they have to cooperate a lot on the roads. So you have lots of little businesses or, you know, proprietors running their own independent thing. A lot of the farmers who couldn't make it in farming because of the dirty tricks went into farming. I mean, went into trucking because they wanted to be their own boss. So you have a fairly independent, responsible, educated, experienced group of people. And they're capable of great cooperation. And it wouldn't surprise me if they had a lot of support in the police and military.
Yeah.
So, and they have a lot of support in their communities.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've never known a trucker who wasn't popular in our community or liked or supported. These are people who looked at, you know, in the local community as very hardworking and very productive and doing important things.
Absolutely.
So could truckers organize something like this? Yes. Could truckers inspire the kind of support that they're getting? Yes. The question is, Mr. Global could have interfered with them more? When you control the satellites and can turn the gas supply off, you know, you could have interceded more. They're not interceding.
Yes.
So the question is why?
Right. It's almost like they want it to play out. I think a little bit about J6.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. What the central bankers want, I think, is they want the general population to destroy the sovereign governments, you know, because that helps them complete turning control over the banks and corporations. They may need the, you know, leave the governments in place, but you have the central bankers moving in and taking control of the treasury. And if they can get the general population to support them in doing that and sort of strip the sovereign governments of their last powers, you'll be in great shape. So, you know, one of the things you never want to believe is when you hear somebody say, oh, the current system is hopeless, let's just walk away and start afresh. What I hear is, Oh, let's tear up the Constitution, destroy the Second Amendment, destroy any human rights we have left, and make it really easy for Mr. Global to keep the 21 trillion because now there's no mechanism to get it back.
Right.
Really? Do you think that's a great idea? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, the message I would give the truckers is you want to return control of the government to a legislature who is trustworthy.
Right.
So, watch the movie, the Scott Brothers movie Gladiator. I guess it was Ridley. Can't remember if it's Tony or Ridley who made the Gladiator, but
Right.
watch the Gladiator. You need control turned back, to the Senate, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fantastic point, which is it's not a kind of anarchy situation you're looking for by a long shot, because that gives them all the ability to run emergency power responses and all the rest. And the
Yeah.
continuity of government, right, kicks in. Talk about America.
Well, here's the thing. Trudeau is an idiot, and one thing I think everybody can agree on is,
Ugh.
if we want some entertainment, let's get rid of Trudeau. That's a good move for everybody, and it'll certainly be entertaining to watch him go down. So,
Yeah, no question about
right.
it. It's very, very dicey background there, all the way back to his dad.
So our hero of the week next week is the Royal Canadian Mounty who was his security detail who resigned.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Talk
Yeah.
about a fearless, courageous guy.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Talk about America for a moment and the situation in America. So, they've rolled out a number of mandates and things over the course of these 2 years. They shut down a lot of businesses. They've destroyed big swaths of the economy. They've got inflation cramming up the highest since 1981, which was the
Okay,
worst.
so let's look at the inflation number for a second, because if you look at the Chapwood Index, which is what I use shadow stats in the Chapwood Index to track real inflation.
Right.
So the notion that inflation has suddenly spiked up means, you've been in a trance if you think that's true. The Chapwood Index, depending on where you live, the last 10 years, the average increase, now I'm not talking about monetary inflation, now I'm talking about household good price inflation. If you take a basket of 50 of the most common household goods, they have been going up, depending on where you live in the United States, 8 to 12% a year for the last 10 years. So when you tell me inflation is 7.5%, I'm like, yeah, right.
Right. That's the Wall Street Journal
Where
number.
you been, pal? Right, that's the Wall Street Journal number. Well, it's enough. I don't know if you know this. The Fed is having an emergency closed-door session on Monday.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Just announced Valentine's Day massacre coming.
About.
I'm sure it's about 7.5% inflation number.
Incredible.
Right. So, and remember, Powell still hasn't been confirmed his new term, so he's acting.
Exactly.
Anyway,
What would the actual figure be?
well, if you look at a breakdown of all the inflation numbers, you had numbers that were jumping 20, 40. Let me see if I can find some of the numbers for you because I was just looking at them the other day. This is since January 2021. Natural gas up 81%, oil up 66%, agricultural commodities up 24%, rent up 13%, used car prices up 44%, gasoline up 36%, cattle prices up 20%, lumber up 15%, coffee up 92%, hotel prices up 37%, but today CPL up 7.5%. Oh yeah, right.
Wow,
Right. Anyway,
phenomenal.
yeah.
I think it's clear, at least on the, basic disclosing side, now everyone can say, oh, inflation's through the roof, right? So it has been through the roof, but now they're able to talk about it openly.
Well, so yeah, so now it's easier to talk about openly.
I'm just trying to get at what's happening in America because.
Okay, here's what's happening in America. You have the coup printing money and buying things, and then trying to engineer managed deflation to offset the monetary inflation, make it cheaper to buy those things. Okay. So I print money, give it, you know, so you've gotten our two latest wrap-ups where we go into the going direct reset. Now, did you get the CBDC wrap-up?
I've been reading this one too, so.
So here's the thing to understand, and I'm just going to be gruesome because this is our
Yeah,
scenario. Every
please
year
do.
we do scenario designs. Right now we're watching early indications of a significant rise in all-cause mortality.
Yes.
That is very deflating. So my question about inflation this year is you're going to have monetary inflation driving significant, you know, potential price increase. At the same time, you're going to have a dramatic increase in all-cause mortality, or we're experiencing a dramatic increase in all-cause mortality, which, among other things, is going to cause capital to drop to the next generation. And this is really a question of calibration. You know, how much deflation are you going to get from killing people versus how much inflation are you going to get from printing money?
Right.
Think of Fauci as like a deflation to go machine. You put in a quarter, you call, and you say, Fauci, do this, and he creates some more deflation.
It's interesting the amount of times that he's been shown to have lied on the record. This is, seems to me a problem, a credibility problem for these people. In some ways, I don't understand aspects of how they've rolled this out, even as a control op. It seems to me that they almost want to discredit themselves on a strange level.
Well, I think it's there's sort of an occult, you know, an occult question here, which is how much can we torture people and get them to do absurd things and pretend, you know, to go along? There's sort of
Yeah.
right. It's kind of a demonic thing. We make you pretend that this is legitimate when the guy just lied, you know, three times, and it's obvious.
Right.
Right.
It gets to a kind of insanity that we've seen, just speaking politically now, that you see when that happens and they get into this kind of mindset, usually those types of administrations go down and hard.
Okay, so the story of I am good, we know in the red button problem, you know, everybody's getting subsidized by going along with the model. So we have the central banking warfare model, and the CIA is running around engineering coups all around the world. And of course, now they're engineering one, you know, in our country, but until then they were engineering them around the world, and we were all getting our check. And so what we wanted in addition to getting the check is we wanted the story of I'm good. I'm a good Christian. I'm not really doing this. I'm not part of the organized crime. And so what politicians were giving the population was they wanted their check and they wanted the story of why they're good and none of this is their fault and they don't have to take responsibility for it, right? Okay, so we've reached the point where the story of I am good is one that is becoming increasingly ridiculous and absurd. But remember, it's an old process giving people the story of I'm good. You know, we're going to Iraq to save the women and bring women rights. Right, but the oil's not important. You know, I mean,
Right.
this process of people going along with ridiculous stories of I'm good has been going on for over a century that I can tell.
Catherine, I wanted to ask a forward-looking question. The rest of 2022, 2023, what are we looking at here?
So I think in November we're going to see a Republican landslide. The Republicans take the Senate and the House back. I think that's kind of baked into the cake. And traditionally, the Republicans have been better at engineering electronic voting fraud than the Democrats. So I can't believe they can't, you know, protect it this time. So I think you get a Republican landslide. And with that landslide, you get a huge turn in sort of mood, consciousness, and momentum. And the Republicans start doing investigations. And then the question is, where does that go? And they're all going to be trying to lock in the control grid through the payment systems, through the money system. So we've watched two money systems shut off the money to the truckers. You know, I've been spending all year fighting with different payment systems and, you know, dealing with the banking system to more and more control. So, you know, we started a program called Cash and Coin, and now we're doing everything we can to encourage our subscribers to, you know, mail us checks. We're doing it the old fashioned way.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so
I mean, I know about Cash Fridays, but this is another level.
Yeah, no, we started something called Cash and Coin, and you can send a check, you can send us coins, you can drop money off at the Hickory Valley grocery store if you want to, you know, drive by and do cash. Anyway, so we're trying to create more and more options to just go direct in through the banking system. And in Europe, you can just go bank to bank. You don't have to go through an online payment system.
Is it even possible to get around these digital payment systems?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it is. But we're going to have to, you know, if you look at how much time and work it takes for someone like Solari to convert from online payment to doing it the way we're increasingly going to do it, that's a huge investment in infrastructure. And I've been working with people here locally and people around the world to create a new infrastructure to do transactions without any of this. Without digital systems.
Incredible. What are you calling that?
Secret.
I like the sound of it. Please cut me in on that one. I want to hear more about it.
Well, here's the trick to that one. You have to be able to create. I go back to the story of Gideon. I don't know if you've ever listened to my interview with Thomas Meyer on the story of Gideon. But if you listen to the story of Gideon, you know, can you find 300 faithful, competent, honest people who will hold the line? No bad dogs, no rats.
Right.
You know, you're talking about a high culture and ethic. And you know, everybody, it's funny, when I was on Wall Street, these syndicates would, you know, 300 firms who were competing, cutthroat, would come together in a syndicate, do a $1 billion transaction, high trust, high speed, everything based on verbal words, you know, at high speed, and keep their word, and totally trustworthy, totally, you know, and then come apart, go back to competing with each other. So, you know, these kinds of arrangements have existed throughout the centuries, but part of the effort of debasing the culture in the population is the more immoral people are, the more incapable they are of creating independent separate systems.
Interesting.
You need a very ethical, very moral, you know, I was brought up, I was trained for, you know, my whole life to basically a banker's word, a certain kind of banker's word was their bond. And you defended your transaction and your word to the death. I mean, that's what the whole litigation was. It was all about defending the transaction to the death, if that's what it took.
Amazing.
So, you know, it was a real ethic.
And that's the kind of bond, for example, in the Constitution, that same
covenant.
Yeah.
But if you're going to have a transaction system outside of the existing systems, you have to have the ability to create and maintain a covenant. And that's why the Bitcoin and crypto people are so excited about sort of the covenants or rules they've created, because they think that will suffice. And they don't understand it's not enough to have it baked into the technology. The people have to hold the line. It's always going to come down to the people.
You know, I'm gonna ask
Mr. Global and the Bitcoin people are trying to create something where we can trust the machine. It's not going to work.
Right.
Right. Unless we want to depopulate all the people and just have machines running machines, then maybe it'll work.
I get the impression that's where they're headed. So we've been looking at this incredible push, and I just want to say it's kind of a Bitcoin cult. You know, I understand the appeal and everything else and the whole hope. Oh,
so I sent you a link to the marathon discussion on Mercola with Bitcoin. Did you listen?
I did listen.
Oh, my God. Don't you have anything better to do? You know, I listen to all these interviews when I'm cleaning, you know, or doing laundry or walking, you know.
I like when things get in the subconscious. Although when I studied Gurdjieff, he said not to do that. He said, if you're cleaning or whatever, you just do that. You really be present for that. You don't listen to anything else. That's hard.
I cannot do that when I'm cleaning. I have to have something to engage my, you know,
associative mind. But this is, and that is a fantastic discussion, as is the dedication of the person you're talking to, saying, well, you know, Bitcoin is as independent as the letter H or whatever it is, and it just ain't so.
So, I don't think so. Because here's the thing, the technology is either independent and unhackable or it's not. I believe it's hackable. I think there are a variety of different ways that Mr. Global can interfere and control the technology. But let's assume for a second that I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Even if I'm wrong, if you look at the control grid, which controls one person at a time, that control grid can basically shut down the liquidity and the value. You know, if they can't control the technology, they can drive it down to almost nothing. And that's why, you know, because what I want is I want to be free. Mm-hmm. And for me to be free, I need a critical mass of other people committed to insisting on freedom. Right. And the technology and the machines can be very helpful, but they can't replace the need. You know, it was interesting. At the end of the interview, I explained about the $250,000 that I gifted or donated to people and that money had saved my life. But I made it clear, you know, if so this is at the end of the when the litigation happened, I had given or gifted or lent $250,000 to family and friends. And they got together and said, well, you know, she helped us, we'll help her. And over the next 11 years, $250,000 got gifted or lent back to me. And it was that money that the establishment could never shut off. Right. Because it wasn't, you know, it was out there in the people bank, so to speak.
Yes.
But what was interesting is if I had $250,000 in Bitcoin, it wouldn't have saved my life. Because it was those people acting as a witness, those people caring, those people asking questions, those people interceding. It wasn't just the money, it was the people refusing to let me be isolated. Uh-huh. That's what saved my life.
Right.
And no technology can do that.
Exactly. That's an excellent point. The idea that, you know, this has come along to save us from the Fed and everything along this line, what is your fundamental argument against that?
So most of the money that has flowed into Bitcoin has come off of the Fed bubble. So you have the Fed bubbling the economy in a variety of different ways, and that money is part of what's, you know, seeding the Bitcoin pump. So you have speculative bubbles all over the planet, and Bitcoin is tiny relative to some of the others. But they're all experiencing that flow of liquidity that comes from massive amounts of printing money. So to me, Bitcoin is a integral part of the bubbles blown by the Fed. You know, which is not to say the Fed sat down and said, oh, you know, let's print, you know, $250 million to put into Bitcoin. In other words, you're talking about, you know, money. If you stand at the top of the hill and pour water, it's all going to flow down, right? So it's an integral part of all the different bubbles. So I just don't see it as being very separate. But there's no doubt, if you look at the game that was afoot when Bitcoin started, the goal was to suck as much money away from gold and silver and real assets as possible, because, you know, you're trying to accumulate and control all the real assets. And if you're trying to control and all the real assets, but retail is competing with you to own and control them, you know, it's going to run the price up and make it much more difficult to own and control. And your problem with gold is if the gold price goes too high, it's the smoke alarm. It lets everybody know there's a problem. So if you can come up with a way for people to make a fortune, you know, in digital assets and walk away from gold, that's cheap at any price. So if I'm a central banker, I'll spend, you know, let's say Bitcoin today is about $700 billion, you know, and let's say, you know, we had to put $100 billion in to get that going and the rest is just price increase. Mm-hmm. You know, $100 billion is cheap at any price to keep the gold price down. Because I can just print it out of thin air, right?
Right.
Right. So, and the beauty of it is it doesn't cause inflation. In other words, if you're trying to keep inflation down and all that money is going into farmland and gold, inflation is going to be through the roof. If you're putting it in Bitcoin, then, you know, Bitcoin is going up, up, up on people's balance sheet, but it's not creating real inflation. I mean, it's using up a lot of energy, but it's not creating real inflation.
Nor is it creating real wealth.
Well, the people who liquefy their holdings, you know, can end up with real wealth. I just got a note from a subscriber. It took me a year and a half. He made a bunch of money in Bitcoin, and then he tried to sell. It took him a year and a half to get his cash. A little sticky, little sticky.
Yeah, that's not so easy. I'd love to hear that full story. But one of the things I want to ask you about this then, you mentioned farmland in there. We noticed that last year it was revealed that Bill Gates became the principal owner of farmland in America.
Right.
And he did it through little shell companies trying to keep it under wraps.
Right.
What's going on there?
Well, while you're making money on your Bitcoin, your parents are selling the family farm to Bill Gates.
Right.
Right. And he's going to feed you synthetic food and insects. Right.
The insect diet is coming in the future. This is what they're pushing. The impossible.
There's a plan. Somebody just built a plant. They're building a plant. I can't remember where it was. I think it was Indiana. The first insect food plant.
This is where they're headed.
Yeah.
That's the
sort of incredible. Now it's funny because the young man that I was talking to on the Bitcoin interview basically said, first you make your money in Bitcoin and then you arrange food. And I don't think he realizes it takes many decades to build a successful farm with real food, producing real food. You know, you can't just order it like an aspirin when you're ready. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It has to be there. If there's no land and no farmers available and no 20 years to get it going and make sure it's working right and calibrate it. In other words, human systems aren't digital systems.
Right.
So I can take $1 billion and get a digital system up like that, but I can't take $1 billion and get a living system up like that. It doesn't work that way.
What is Gates doing buying up the farmland?
I'm assuming he's doing a good job of investing his money. I mean,
consolidation that they see coming, a food crisis could help them, and he wants to consolidate that.
Well, I think the question is, where can you put money that has a good strategic position and can produce a long-term yield? Mm-hmm. And it's a no-brainer. If you look at, we did a big wrap-up on food called Global Harvest.
Yes.
And one of the things we were able to show is we've been in a period of relative food stability, but that was going to come to an end. And when it came to an end, one of the most important points for any country was, were you a food supplier or were you food surplus or food deficit? And what were the politics and the economics of that? And, you know, it's pretty clear that having control of significant amount of food supply in this environment is a great strategic position to have. So, and it was clear that certain kinds of food investments were going to be great investments to make. Nice. So I think he's thinking using synthetic food and technology, he can get an edge. But, you know, so I'm assuming it was just a sound financial investment, whether or not he wants to take the land out of use. You know, so there are games you could play on climate change where you could make more money, but he might just want to take it out of use. Cause if you're going to try and finance synthetic food, taking the farmland out of availability is a great way to market your synthetic food.
Amazing. Food is going to be critical in this decade.
No, food is critical now.
Yes.
So, you know, if you've been eating bad food, you're in real trouble. So you better start eating good food, and you better figure out how to get food. And the problem is not just what will food cost, Daniel. It's is your food nutritious and safe? Okay. So one of the most interesting salary reports we ever did was with a professor emeritus from Purdue University, agriculture professor, used to be in military intelligence, describing the secret ingredients in food. So we've seen a complete collapse in corporate quality standards in America. You know, as soon as Amazon bought Whole Foods, that's what I was. No hamburger at Whole Foods ever again. That's it. I'm out. You know, I want to be able to see, you know, I've got to be able to see that it was a chicken and it looks like a chicken.
Right. Yeah.
Right. No mystery food. So I think they're real serious quality control standards. And I think the question is, where are you going to get food that has real nutrition and is safe?
Yes.
You know, it's got to come from a chain of integrity. One of the most frightening books I ever read in my life is called China Rx. And most of American pharmaceuticals come from China, the ingredients. So they package them in America, but the ingredients are made in China because they can get around all the quality control standards.
Right.
And if you look at the quality control issues that have occurred in American pharmaceuticals as a result of this China connection, it's frightening.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Especially since we in China are competing very seriously.
No question.
So the fact that you're putting in your body ingredients coming from a country that you enjoy lots of tension with.
Do you think
scary.
Come up in the middle of all this with the mandates and everything else and the kind of central control, social credit type systems that we've seen? A lot of people are saying, you know, that coup that's happening in America, it's the CCP. You know, a Steve Bannon type guy will come out and say, the CCP is taking over these local governments. How much stock do you put in that?
I had one ally call me and he said, the chemtrails, all the spraying over America is being done by the Chinese. I thought, oh, the U.S. military is helpless to stop the Chinese. So, you know, if the Chinese are doing something dangerous in America, it's because the American establishment has financed them and invited them to do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here's the reality. We try and talk about the world as though it's run by sovereign governance. You know, yes, we have sovereign governments, but those sovereign governments are in many respects doing what they're told by a variety of parties. And the big reality is more and more of the power, the weaponry, and the money is in the hands of private parties.
Right.
So I just did an interview this morning with a wonderful Dutch reporter on space. And the question was, okay, who's got the biggest gun in space?
Right.
Right. And if you and I were going to make a list of what our options are, okay, let's just do this.
Yes.
Okay. I've got my little salary. Okay. So we have the U.S. government, right?
Yes, definitely.
Whoever is really in control. We have the Chinese government. We have the Russian government. Okay. Russia is number two in space, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have those governments. We have the breakaways. How many breakaway civilizations are there? One, two, three? So we have, let's say, the Bushy breakaways. We have Nazi International, right? Spectre.
Yeah, right.
Spectre, so to speak. We have whoever had the airships 100 years ago, maybe yes. Other humans. Okay. So we've got one or more breakaway civilizations. Then we have what I will describe as others, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So others are different species who are co-located on Earth. Other are different species from other planets. I'm assuming in the breakaways, humans living on the moon, or I'll include those in breakaway. Then we have time travel. We have interdimensional. Anything else?
That's a pretty good, I think you've encapsulated it pretty well.
Okay, so we have a fair amount of options. And if you look at these options, and of course, You know, we have more and more money going into SPACs and financing corporations going into space. So I dare say Lockheed Martin is more powerful in space than the U.S. government, or at least telling the U.S. government what to do.
Yes.
So if you look at this list, the non-sovereign governmental actors are probably significantly more powerful than the sovereign government actors. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yes.
But we just don't know who or what they are.
Well, the biggest telltale is no manned missions to the moon in 50 years. That really answers... That we know of, exactly. Right. On the record, NASA approved. but this is fascinating because when you break those groups down, for example, you know, advanced German groups that have had the technology, possibly right. even an ancient link involved in that. So it's hard because people would say, you know, you're talking about the UFO file now, and people just say, well, there's some aliens visiting and grabbing people for tests and all
yeah,
the rest.
But we've had record of people flying around this planet for 10,000 years.
Yeah.
In ancient India, you know, so we had the airship mysteries in the 1800s.
Yes.
You know, there's been flight around this planet for a long, long time.
No question.
Right. So, you know, whatever China is doing it with the capital that the G7 nations invested to build China up to where it is today.
No question.
Right.
They put them in this position. They made right. they sort of reinvented New America there by shipping all the factories and money over there.
Right.
This is interesting to me about space, though, because everyone now is coming forward and saying, well, China's getting this great position in space. We have to arm space, as if they haven't already.
They have.
Yes.
Right.
And of course, the great thing when Kennedy started the space program and Eisenhower, they didn't want it to be militarized.
Right. Eisenhower and Kennedy knew they didn't want it to be militarized. And our last sort of governance document for space is a treaty that basically says they can't weaponize it, which we know is being
shredded now.
Shredded, right.
Basic fundamental idea. You have a global control grid from space. It's just easier to control everything. And this is one of the things that Bobby Kennedy brought up, and they gave him such a hard time for. And he said, well, at least in Anne Frank's time, you know, you could go somewhere. You could go to the Swiss Alps. You could run away. But with the satellites and everything, there's nowhere to run to.
There's no way to run.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, globalization really kicked off in the 90s because of what could be then done with the space. I mean, the Gulf War had a significant impact because it showed what precision munitions, depending on satellites, could do.
Right.
You know, and I bring up the... You know, whatever they did to the army, the Iraqi army, to get it to just lie down and give up, you know, that includes mind control. So, you know, whatever went on during the Gulf War was a demonstration of the power of what satellites could deliver. And that's before we get into weather control and weather modification.
That's a great untold story.
Yeah. I would love to find somebody who could really unpack exactly what the role of the satellites were in both the mind controlling of the Iraqi army and the precision munitions.
Right.
So that's a very interesting conversation because in one respect, it was our first space war, you know, but that space war was like a prototype that indicated, okay, we're off to the races. Now we can globalize because everybody's totally clear. We can enforce anywhere. So if you watch the movie Syriana, you know, it's a reminder, oh, you don't do what you're told in the middle of in the middle of the Middle Eastern country, you know, the CIA can take out you and your family.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Well, you made this point when you were speaking about.
That's all said, even though the drone may not be satellites, the surveillance that makes it work is satellites.
Right. And this is the famous Hillary Clinton statement about why can't we just drone strike Assange?
Exactly. Right.
You know, what's the problem? And we all see what's going on with him. But here's one interesting thing that I want to point to that you pointed out. You've said, well, look, the real threat of this digital control system is if they don't want you driving beyond the 25-mile radius, that's it. You're shut off. If they don't want you to buy pizza, you're shut off. That's the kind of realization and thing I think that does not sink in.
They are going to turn your home, your car, and your community into a digital concentration camp.
Yes.
They can turn off your refrigerator. They can turn off your water. They can turn off your gas. They can turn off your car. They can turn off your credit card. They can turn off your bank account. Everything. That's where they're going. That's what they want.
And you're saying this is what needs to be stopped, and it needs to be stopped now, because by the time you get into a year or two, it's too late.
It's too late. We have a year to two to stop it. And it's interesting. Mike Yaden, who is such a brilliant, amazing, fearless doctor, scientist, he pointed out the other day, oh, they're building it in different pieces, and so you don't realize it's all going to snap together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they've been building it for 30 years, piece by piece by piece.
Absolutely fascinating. I think this is the realization, and of course, this is where the CBDC aspect comes in. That's their great push.
It comes in on the CBDC. No, their great push right now is in the terms and conditions of every piece of financial software you approve and agree to use. Go read the terms and conditions. So I wanted to get an ACH service for our online payment. Mm-hmm. So I kept looking for different packages that I could use to do ACH. And so I found what I considered to be the best one. And I always read the terms and conditions. Well, it turned out there were three sets of terms and conditions. I printed them all out, 110 pages of tiny print. I read all of them very carefully. It took several weeks of sort of working nights and weekends. I read all of them very carefully. Two of them were absolutely unacceptable. One I could live with. So I called the relationship. They have an account officer. So I talked to, I said, I can sign the first one, but not the second two. And they said, well, if you're just going to use ACH and not credit cards, you don't need to sign the second two. I said, great. So they get me on the, they get me an account and I get online and it's requiring me to approve the second two. And she said, oh, well, just click that you agree, but you're not going to use them since you won't use credit. I said, I'm not going to click them because it says here, if I click them, I agree to them. I'm not going to click them.
All right.
You know, I've spent 11 years in litigation. I know not to do that. So they built a workaround and figured out a way for me to sign up. So once again, they get me back online. I click on the one. I agree to that set of terms and conditions. We're going in, and he's walking me through how to finish setting up the account. And suddenly, a new box pops up with a new set of terms and conditions. And he said, oh, just click you agree. You don't need to read them. Nobody ever does. I said, no, I really need to read them. So he's like, oh, you're being so difficult. So I printed out, it's 35 pages. So
wow.
110, now I got a new 35 pages. So I that weekend, I sit down and I read the whole thing, tiny print, 35 pages. Towards the very end, there is a section that says, I agree to comply with all the laws related to financial services and taking payments. Any law on the whole planet globally, 190 plus jurisdictions that may apply to me. You know, so if I get a subscriber from Kathmandu, you know, the Nepalese financial services laws apply, and I swear that I will comply with all of them, not just the ones existent today, but any new ones that pass in the future. So this is completely open-ended that I'm liable to comply with all of them. So I wrote them and I said, do you have a list of laws just of what's existing today? They said, no, that's your due diligence. Now, if I was going to put together that list, it would take me and my general counsel maybe 2 years to do a complete.
Oh, wow.
No. It's hideously complex. So then it said, if I failed to obey those laws, they reserve the right to come into my bank account and take out whatever money they deem necessary as a fine or fee to deal with the situation without a court order and without evidence, and to keep it for 6 months.
Wow.
So if it turned out I didn't owe them anything, they could take everything in our bank account out and keep it for 6 months. And I was authorizing them to do that.
Incredible.
So I went back and I said, you know, I can't sign this. And they considered me to be very difficult. Believe it or not, the company was owned by a credit card company. And the next week I traveled to Switzerland and they froze the credit card and refused to use it until I did, you know, I then wanted a current photo. I've had this credit card for 20 years, but they wanted all sorts of new documentation to prove I was who I was. And I said, you know, one, you're not getting it, but two, if you don't turn on the card, I'm canceling the card. I'll get another card, you know, good luck, and hung up on them. But yeah, wow. Was it connected? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
Unbelievable.
See if they turn it off, you know, because I told the story.
Right.
Well, so,
now you've done
no,
it.
But here's the thing. If you look at all the terms and conditions on your bank accounts, your credit cards, that's where the control grid is moving in. So we've just had a huge brouhaha where the IRS tried to say to get your refund, you needed a biometric ID, and Congress made them back down.
Yes. They were like, you need facial recognition.
That's the control grid going into place. And I'm sympathetic. In this one, I'm sympathetic to the IRS because if you look at the fraud they deal with on the refunds, it's frightening. So, you know, they're under siege on the refunds, and I'm sympathetic with their, you know, they're trying to deal with it.
What's the end goal of CBDC?
Complete control. I mean, if you go to Solaria.com and click on Cash Friday, you can pull up a video. I don't know. Can you show it in the video? It's 56 seconds.
Yeah.
Hold on. Can you share the screen? Let me just pull it up. This is Carstens, the general manager of the Bank and International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland. And this is October 2020 at a IMF panel on cross-border payments. And when he said this, it was Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Oh my, I thought he was going to piss in his pants when he said this. It was so funny. Hold on. Okay, here we go.
Analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash. And there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also we will have the technology to enforce that. Those two issues are extremely important, and that makes a huge difference with respect to what cash is.
You know, and it's funny because I would tell people about the control grid and why they had to be concerned and blah, blah, blah. And they would go like, yeah. And then I play this for them and they go nuts because they suddenly can feel it. They can feel the trap closing in on them.
Yes.
And they're like, oh my God.
From the World Economic Forum, when they go into the "you won't own anything, it's 2030, but you'll like it." That's one of those things that's waking people up.
Do you like it? Oh, yeah, I like it. So, I always tell everybody what it means is it's 2030. We've stripped you of your assets and you're mind controlled.
Yes.
You know, and if you don't say you like it, we'll turn off your credit card.
Right. And right. You won't be able to drive and no pizza.
No pizza.
I love that one. Catherine, I want to go back to space real briefly for a moment, because you were mentioning some things in there about the space wars. One very unusual thing that you might be able to really open up here is Kirsten Gillibrand has created this new UFO office in the government.
The Congresswoman from New York?
Yes, she's a senator. And
senator now.
She's the one who was originally appointed when Clinton left to become the glorious Secretary of State in Bombardier.
Right.
So they put her in there, and she has some unusual aerospace. For example, her father-in-law ran BAE, which is the British Aerospace.
Okay.
So she has created the ASRO, and they attached it to the NDAA. They would not.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Why?
They would not let this thing pass without that in there. And what's weird is her partner is Marco Rubio.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Democrat, Republican, ASRO is the UFO office that they've created. Kirsten Gillibrand, her presence in there and these senators suddenly being interested.
Oh, my God. She was at Davis Polk.
Yes.
Black budget. Big, big black budget.
Right.
Oh, wow. And then she became a partner at Bose Schiller. More black budget. That's Theranos' law firm. Ooh, who was running around terrorizing everybody.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Her presence struck me as I could instantly feel reading some of this. I said, why are they using Gillibrand for this? And the office itself is very unusual because now it all answers to Avril Haines, who is the DNI.
Right. And well, that would make sense.
Yeah. So she was the one
who was called. Eisenhower's mistake of putting the CIA in charge of security for Area 51.
Yes, that's an old mistake.
Right.
But Gillibrand, Rubio, the UFO file.
Well, here's the thing that, you know, a lot of the black budget, you know, side of this has been run from the New York law firms, New York, and the intelligence agencies. You know, so it's not run from the central bank. It's run from the law firms and the intelligence agencies. That's always been a major player in managing the money around this. So,
but the other interesting twist on her is that her husband's family was all involved with the NXIVM cult. As a matter of fact, the husband represented NXIVM as a lawyer, you know, back over a decade ago. So that, you know, the NXIVM sex cult tie-in, I thought was kind of an interesting indicator of where that family's at.
So I just think if you look at who she is and where she's from, she's basically in, you know, coming up through an establishment legal and financial machinery. And so now she's just in the Senate. So it would be a logical thing for someone like her to be under her umbrella. And I'm assuming part of it is she's always had an image of being a little bit more hip.
Right.
You know, so
she ran for president in 2020.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that.
Her presence in this NXIVM UFO file.
Now, it says here she's married. It doesn't say anything about Rubio.
No, Rubio is her partner in crime in the ASRO office.
Okay.
Yeah, they partnered politically.
So you mean political partner. Yeah, I was like, huh? Yeah, okay.
Little Marco, as Trump liked to call him.
Okay, so no, I don't know. Given her legal background, given her being a senator from New York and a little bit of a image of a little hipper, doesn't, you know, it seems like a logical fit that they would ask her to do that one.
The three key people around this UAP office push, the ASRO is the name of the office, that they attached NDAA. Rubio, Kirsten Gillibrand was the lead on it. Ruben Gallego, who is a congressman in Arizona whose wife is the mayor of Phoenix. Now he's come out and he's like, we need UAP disclosure. We need UFO disclosure. These people are practically sounding like, you know, the Art Bell show from 2008 or something. What is going on with these? What are they hearing in the background that they're coming forward?
So you just need a cubbyhole, you know, so one of the most important things in Washington is that you answer your mail.
Yeah.
So if people have a concern, you want to say, oh, you know, we share your concern and we're thinking about it. So you need a cubbyhole where you send all the UFO mail. Right. And so it's kind of like a place and a, you know, we're thinking about it. It's a place to send that energy and concern and let it flow around in circles.
Right.
It's a cubbyhole for the mail. If you say there's no such thing, you know, there's no cubbyhole for the mail, here's your letter back, that is going to cause people to go off and create real disclosure avenues on their own. without government.
Right. Yeah.
So you need the more and more attention these issues get, you need to take it more seriously. So you need to have an office, you need to have a post office box, you need to answer the letters. I mean, come on. This is not a serious disclosure effort, right?
No, not by a long shot. But just like the TTSA thing, but NDAA, the CIA behind the TTSA, the UFO threat part, I see them, they're building it out. It's almost like the infrastructure for the threat.
Well, the concern has always been that they would use these for false flags, and they might. They might. I don't know. I don't know. It's phenomenal that a phenomena could engage this many people and this much activity worldwide, and we still pretend it's not a real phenomena. So, I don't know what to say other than it's looming.
It's looming there.
Yeah, this one is definitely. I would say, if you look at the coup d'etat that we're experiencing, that coup d'etat has done incalculable harm to millions, if not billions, of people globally. And the day is coming where we can't pretend that that harm hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. At some point we're going to figure out, that all these different people that thought they were hurt by different things are going to realize, we all share one problem. I don't know if you've ever read my story called Meditations at the Crossroads about the assassination of my mother. And at the end of it, what I say is, all these people who thought their loved ones were killed by narcotics trafficking or nuclear fallout or, this or that or this or that, what we need to understand is, no, we weren't killed by these different things. We were killed by a relatively small group of people, who've authorized all of this.
Right.
And once we discover that we all share the same little group of enemies, maybe we can get something done.
Yes.
Yeah.
I always say that too, that when we know the names of the people, like, the Bezoses and the Gates, et cetera, but we know that if they're visible.
No, those are the chew toys.
Yeah, right.
John Titus, I don't know if you heard this. John Titus is so funny.
Yeah.
He does Money and Markets with me every week on Solari.
Yeah.
And I used to dread doing Money and Markets. And then I asked Titus to help me. And ever since then, I love doing Money and Markets. he has these amazing expressions. Like he came up with Sticky Fingers Amarava, which I'm convinced got her, made a significant contribution to killing her nomination for the controller of the currency, Sticky Fingers. Anyway, but he came up with chew toys. So Klaus Schwab, Soros, Gates, and Fauci are all chew toys to be thrown to the, so they're kind of the chew toys, but.
Throw them to the Roman crowd, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the big question of this summer. Who's going to be the chew toys? I don't know. What's your vote?
Well, it's interesting with Bezos because what happened was he just built a super yacht. They're removing a historic bridge.
It's in the Netherlands.
In Rotterdam. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, this.
It gets even better. The EU announced that climate change will not apply to yachts.
So that's right in your face, right?
So John Kerry, the climate change czar, I'm sure will be very happy.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Catherine, just incredible information and gifted insight for everyone listening today. Thank you. Now sit tight and we'll do part two right now and go even deeper. And we'll make that available shortly at darkjournalist.com. Of course, you can get the Solari Report at solari.com. I highly recommend it. We'll see you back on Fridays here in February at 8 p.m. with the new X-Series episodes. See you soon.